My name is Frank Lavinia. I'm a developer evangelist in the U.S. public sector team. I'm new to the team, working on month number two at Microsoft. So I'm going to talk to you today about a little bit of what I saw when I was in Las Vegas last week. Maybe not everything, but everything technical. That was a joke. Good. I love graphics, so I came up with this fun little graphic to bring a little bit of the Las Vegas Strip to right here to Reston. So the big takeaways from Mix, this year it was largely a Internet Explorer and HTML 5 show with Silverlight 5 and Windows Phone 7. We saw they released a platform preview for Internet Explorer 10, which I'll show you a little bit of that later. Talking about having the best native experiences in HTML 5 being with Internet Explorer. Silverlight 5, which was announced last December, at the Silverlight Firestarter, is now available for download, and we'll take a look at some code samples with that. We'll also show off, or we'll talk about the Kinect SDK, since as try as I might, I couldn't get my hands on it. It's not going to be released until later this spring, so maybe we'll have a dev dinner talking about that. But one lucky person will walk away with a Kinect, so you'll have no excuse not to develop Kinect-enabled applications. Entity Framework 4.1 was released. They talked about the Mango update for Windows Phone 7, as well as some tooling updates for MVC3. And there was a dev conference mentioned coming up in September. Now, this developer convention was not named. They never referred to it with by PDC. It just said save the date for the next big developer conference. So right now I'm calling it unofficially the Unknown Developer Conference. That's a picture of the Unknown comic, if any of you remember that. Maybe I'm just showing my age. You remember that? Okay, good. You don't remember that.
Is it an undisclosed location?
No, it's actually going to be in Anaheim, California. And I think only the name is undisclosed at this point. There was also talk of the Mango update. So if you're not familiar with it, Mango is the code word for the next major update to Windows Phone 7. The first one to come out was called Nodo, which enabled copy and paste and CDMA support. There was a lot of, well, for lack of a better term, drama about rolling this update out with the different carriers. On day two keynote, the head guy of the team, Joe Bellafori, I'm probably not pronouncing that name right, came out and explained the process and what took so long. So basically, Microsoft submits the software update to the carrier. So we'll call it XTT, wireless, not to pick on anyone in particular. Some go through it faster than others. If you're a Sprint customer and you have a Windows Phone 7 device, your phone shipped with the Nodo update, largely because that had a lot to do with implementing CDMA support. At this point, everybody has gotten the Nodo update, and they learned a lot of lessons as far as how things get pushed out, what carriers take a certain amount of time. They're targeting a fall release timeframe for the Mango update. This was a really interesting talk while we're talking about the phone. If you go to the Channel 9 website or the Mix website, visit mix.com, you'll see find a link to all the sessions that were available. And one of the sessions that really caught my attention was this app design for Windows Phone 7. This slide in particular really made me realize what makes Windows Phone 7 and the Metro language different. It's infographic, not iconographic. And what that means is desktop metaphor, or if you look at the Android phone home screen or the iPhone home screen, everything's icon-based. And you really have to really make a close look at the screen to figure out what's going on. Whereas with the infographic type approach of Windows Phone 7, it's pretty easy to see that this person has 25 text messages and 4 unread emails and 4 missed calls. And I highly recommend watching this session because it really goes into a background and in-depth of of building really successful Windows Phone 7 applications that use this design language called Metro. Has everyone heard of this? Okay. So anyone not hear of this? Okay. Metro is design language that is the basis of Windows Phone 7. It's also the basis of the Zune application. And it takes its cue from highway signs, subway signs, where you can convey a lot of information in a very small space that people just kind of can glance and go. And that was really the design philosophy behind this entire first day with the new Mac. Design philosophy behind this entirely new phone interface. And that's what, you know, you see the commercials where the lady's like, really, you know, you talk about glance and go. So the idea is that you just look at your phone really quick and you have an idea of what's going on. So we don't get cute with like desktop backgrounds or whatever. It's just very, very informational. Highly recommend watching this session because it really talks about the philosophy and how you can build successful Windows Phone 7 apps that really integrate with the environment. Another thing that was announced was the Kinect SDK. So how many people here have not heard of the Kinect? That's great. So one of the things that they announced is actually the best-selling electronics device in history. So they've sold a lot of more units than they anticipated. But even more exciting was the developer response to this. There was the Kinect hacking that was going on, the Open Kinect movement, which basically reverse engineered software drivers so you can plug this into your PC and write code against it. Microsoft was so moved by this that they eventually decided to create an SDK that would be officially supported and then released to the developer community. I've played around with the open source Kinect drivers and such. It's not exactly, it's good, but you really have to know C++ and you really have to really get into it. They showed a code demo of what the SDK has, and it's really looks like a really nice product. A couple of things that they talked about, they gave a really great shout out to the developer community that put together these really cool applications and samples, all without the official SDK. So this is all the creative power that people have. In fact, this gentleman here works for Channel 9, built an easy chair that he could drive with the Kinect. So what you see here, and I have to be careful to look that way because of the lights, but what you see is he had a laptop and a Kinect right in front of it, that he can actually steer that chair by moving his arms around. He also rigged it up so that there's mechanics in the chair so that he can make a gesture like he's pulling a recliner lever in a regular easy chair, and it actually reclines. If you haven't seen the day two keynote and his scene on this, you have to see it. Very cool. Another thing, on a more practical note, was, I know this looks really goofy, so this team from the University of Constance came up with this device for visually impaired folks. So they wear this Kinect on their head, and they can actually, part of the thing of the Kinect is that it has an infrared camera as well as an RGB camera. The infrared camera detects distance. So the infrared camera can actually warn the person if they're coming up too close to a wall, and either give them an audio tone or something like that. Another thing that they demoed, actually, was the use of QR-style tags. Does everyone here know what that is? So if you go to a store or you see these barcode type of things that look like squares, those are called QR codes. If they're black and white, they're QR codes. If they have colors in them, they're Microsoft tags. And basically, this software will actually read it, and it can tell the visually impaired person where they are and give them directions. Now, right now, it's really just a prototype of a couple of grad students. But once this device gets smaller, and it most certainly will, I mean, we can look at a real, really good practical application for this technology. Another interesting thing that I saw was out of the corner of my eye one day, I was talking to someone, and I saw this little laptop on a Roomba go by. And I thought I had seen it all at that point. The robot's roaming about the conference area floor, but it's actually avoiding obstacles by using the distance sensor in the Kinect. So think of the applications for this. Think of the applications for this for public sector, for search and rescue, for the military. A lot of interesting implications with this type of device. Not saying that everyone's going to rush out to the store and pick up a Kinect, but the fact that this technology does exist and it's cheap enough to be a toy, essentially. For $150, you get this type of device that opens up this new world of natural user interface, or what some people call NUI. Another thing that they showed, Scott Guthrie and Laura Foy kind of embarrassing themselves in front of the 4,000 or 5,000 of their closest friends in a video game that was developed by a design company, where you have to, there are two players, and you have to match the silhouette of the cutout that you have. Otherwise, you knock down this, you hit the wall, and it beeps at you. It's silly, but it's a fun party game. But the interesting thing here, this isn't on the Xbox. This is actually some code that somebody wrote for Windows. So, as many of you know, I'm a Silverlight guy. I wrote a Silverlight book, founded the Silverlight Group. I'm going to address, everyone's like, what is this slide about? I'm going to talk about the gorilla in the room. And the gorilla in the room is HTML5 versus Silverlight 5. Right? I mean, that was the thing that everybody was talking about. Ever since last year's PDC, when there really wasn't much of a mention of Silverlight. That led people to make all sorts of wrong conclusions about the future of the technology. In fact, we saw a lot of great demos that show off the power of Internet Explorer 9 and its tight integration with the graphics cards, the CPU, GPUs, and what type of experiences you can build without plugins. HTML5, if you've not heard of it, is basically a new specification, the first one since 1999, to come out from the W3C. There's a lot of story and a lot of history behind it. But the short of it is that HTML5 stands to be kind of a resetting of expectations for web development. These expectations are really more of a media-rich environment, whereas HTML was originally conceived as a document kind of structured. So HTML5 people tend to be very optimistic, and this slide kind of demonstrates how HTML5 developers see HTML5. Where they think everything will be perfect, everything will be unicorns and rainbows. That's not entirely true. I think, though, that while the HTML5 crowd is overly optimistic, I think the Silverlight crowd is also overly pessimistic. Up until Mix, I kind of counted myself in this, but once I saw what HTML5 can do and what the bigger picture was, I believe in it now. I don't believe in the unicorns and the rainbows, but I do believe it has a place in the RIA spectrum. And when I say RIA, I mean rich internet applications. The trade press, they love a good fight. They played this up intensely, particularly after the PDC. And it was no exception reading some of the articles from the trade press during Mix. And every nuance, every word was kind of slanted to create controversy. At least that's what it read like to me. But my impression, my stance is choice is good. I went to the supermarket. These are all the different types of diet soda you can have. Well, at least one brand of it. Choice is good. And I think that's really what this whole HTML5 and Silverlight 5 story is really about. For certain situations, Silverlight is going to be the right path. For certain situations, HTML5 is going to be the right path. In some cases, such as the Blue Angel site that they demoed during the second day keynote, they use both. I don't think it's an either-or type of proposition. The real takeaway from this is we're building tools, and a developer community should choose what they want to build with to their needs. I think that's reasonable. In fact, I have a Coke Zero, Cherry Coke Zero, and a Dr. Pepper. So I'm going to drink both of these during the course of my presentation. So I'll be wired, but I have a choice of using those two tools. Bit of a stretch on the analogy, but I did feel really weird taking this picture in the supermarket. So Silverlight works with the tools that you have, and it also works with the tools that you know. It also is multi-platform, and it runs on the phone. It integrates with SharePoint. It integrates with Office. It even integrates with Eclipse. So what's next for Silverlight? As I mentioned, Silverlight 5, the beta was showed off at the keynote. There are a number of enhancements. I'm not going to go through and read the eye chart, but the big four categories are media, application development, out-of-browser improvements, and the tooling and performance. So these are my favorites that I cherry-picked from that previous list. XAML debugging. How many people here are Silverlight developers or WPF developers? Anyone? Okay, only one guy. All right, you're on my side. No, so if you've worked with the breakpoints and data binding, if something goes wrong, it's kind of a mysterious box. But now you can actually breakpoint in your XAML and see as you code what's failing. There's also implicit data templates. So since most people here are not Silverlight developers, data templates are ways that you have, if you have a list, you can structure the way that list looks like. Now, instead of every time you show a piece of data, you have to have a style associated with the control. Now you can say, I just want everything of this type to look this way, and it gets reused. Double-click support has now been added to Silverlight. There's also the interesting way that was done was such that you can actually track multiple clicks, so it's not just strictly one or two clicks. The usability, I think once you get beyond three, is really makes it difficult, but it's there if you need it. There's also XNA compatible 3D. So if you...
Question.
So the XNA compatible 3D, of course, DirectX compatible hardware. Is that a new hardware? I'm not familiar with the phrase XNA compatible 3D.
So I got to be careful to move my head. So the question was, what does XNA compatible 3D mean? That means that it's a 3D engine that works very similar to the way it worked in XNA. So yes, that's all the GPU accelerated stuff that you would have direct.
Are most DirectX 10 or 11 things XNA compatible 3D or not?
Most.
Okay. I'll look.
Most. There are very fine. I don't pretend to be an XNA expert. I never even played one on TV. That was a joke. I can tell my jokes are really going over. So there's a couple other things. If you're an XNA developer, and do we have any of those in the room? Any XNA developers? No. There's a lot of goodness in Silverlight here for you. Low latency sound effects, which if you ever try to time a sound effect in Silverlight to repeat, most business business applications don't have this problem. But if you were building a synthesizer or any kind of intense game or sound-heavy application, it does kind of come up where you have this quarter of a second or about a tenth of a second delay between when you expect the sound to start and when it actually starts. That's actually been resolved now. The other thing is that you can actually open up different windows. And they're real windows, not like the child window object, which all exists inside the within the Silverlight control that you have. And there's a lot more performance improvements and fixes and a lot more. So 3D, here's a good example of a 3D application. It shows the medical record of Scott Guthrie, and apparently he works out a lot. So the nice thing is that I can drag this window if I have multiple monitors. Right now, Silverlight doesn't take advantage of that. If I launch a separate multiple window, I can drag that to any one of my extra monitors. You can also call platform invoke to call native code or connect to various devices. The last two features require elevated privileges and will only work out of browser. So in case you had any doubt about what the industry's acceptance is of Silverlight, it actually won InfoWorld's 2011 rich internet application development platform of the year. And so it really is, you know, obviously I'm biased for multiple reasons, but it really is the best of breed solution for rich internet applications. So let's do some Silverlight 5 demos. So any questions at this point?
Is there a shift between a Silverlight application platform, Silverlight target application types compared to like a year ago?
So the question was, is there a shift from target application types? Do you mean like what application types
that Microsoft says? Is it sort of like targeted more to phone now than it was, you know, to, you know, business applications?
I wouldn't say more. I mean, obviously more so than maybe like a year and a half ago because there was no phone. but yeah, I mean, part of the confusion was the idea was that Flash is on, you know, 98-99% of the computers that are connected to the internet. Silverlight is on about 60-70%. Not bad for 4 years. But it's still not exactly ubiquitous. You can't throw up a site and just assume that everyone will have Silverlight already in the same way that people have Flash already. So you really have to have a big need. I'm talking public internet. So you really have to have a good need for the Silverlight. You just can't have that silly bouncing or logo on fire thing. Right? You have to have a draw to install it. And in those scenarios, we've seen a lot of success in regards to the Olympics, Monday Night Football. People, to get that extra experience, people don't mind installing a plugin. But if you're trying to sell something, and there was a famous .com that blew up in the early 2000s, boo.com, and it basically was entirely Flash-based, and it crashed all the time. So if you crash, you're not going to sell, you're going to sell a lot less. So for the public internet, where it really excels is DRM scenarios, Netflix. You know, you're not going to encourage a lot of studios to have their movies streamable if it can easily be hijacked. That stream can be hijacked. Silverlight has a lot of DRM protections that makes various copyright owners happy. Silverlight also can provide better media experiences, as we saw with the Summer and Winter Olympics. But if I had my site navigation, all right, my site's a bad example, Frank's World, because I do have a Silverlight navigation. But if somebody comes to my site and they don't have Silverlight installed, they get that little Silverlight's not installed. So I guess you could say I drank the Kool-Aid. But you know, if I had a customer or a client, I would be, for something as critical as navigation, there really ought to be a fallback to just plain HTML. So you had a question.
Kind of following up on that.
Yeah.
Not to beat the grill in the room thing, but the main draws that I take away of going to Silverlight, you mentioned the DRM, better media. What would be your second, third, and fourth reasons of compelling reasons to use Silverlight compared to HTML5?
So the question, just so this is recorded for prosperity, not because I like repeating what you said, although I'm sure I would. So the question was, what would be, since we mentioned the top two, which would be DRM and enhanced media, what would be the other reasons to use Silverlight over HTML5? And the answer to that shows that I used to be a consultant, and the answer is it depends. If we're talking public-facing websites, certainly if you're building an application that has a lot of rich, the downside of HTML5 is it's still HTML, and it relies on what language? Its scripting language is JavaScript. Not a lot of people really thoroughly enjoy developing in JavaScript, right? I mean, see, there was laughter. That's good. And then you also get this whole thing of how much JavaScript you really want. You know, I'll show you some really cool HTML5 demos, but if you look behind the scenes, there's a lot of JavaScript in there. jQuery, frameworks like that, like Modernizer, they take away a lot of the pain, but there's still pain involved. And so you can do something, well, if you, I'll throw out some arbitrary numbers. It might take 10 times the amount of lines of code to do something, or 100, in HTML5 and JavaScript that you can do in one line in Silverlight. You know, so certainly, environments where you can control what's installed on a desktop, intranets, behind the firewall, line of business applications, you can unit test Silverlight apps. You can unit test, because it's C#. You can, a lot of organizations are not going to be enthralled with the notion of taking on the ownership of tens of thousands of lines of JavaScript. But if it's C# code, it's managed code, that's something that they're a lot more going to be happier taking on. So the question was, do I find that the single execution context is a big selling point? What do you mean by single execution? Oh, that is actually an excellent point. So the promise of the web was always write once, run anywhere. We saw that. We've been promised that multiple times. Did that actually happen in Web 1.0? Not really. You write once and you test in every conceivable possible combination, operating system, browser version. So you have this, instead of this write once, run anywhere, you have this matrix of, well, you write it once and it mostly runs everywhere, kind of, sort of, the same way. If you're doing something simple, it's not a big deal. But as sites get more complex, as users' expectations of what their experience should be when they visit your site get more complicated, that becomes a much bigger deal. The real advantage of Silverlight is that if I write a Silverlight app, it's going to run the same on Windows as it does on the Mac, as it does on Unix, and it's going to run the same in Opera, Safari, Chrome, Firefox, Internet Explorer. It's going to run the same. And that is a big win. And particularly for intranet applications, that's a big deal. Because, you know, if, I'm trying to think of a site, so if CNN has a banner ad rotating that bounces or something like that, yeah, that's a big deal. But if the CEO of your company or the CIO tries to book a flight using your internal travel application and he likes Chrome and you didn't code for Chrome, you're going to have some splaining to do, is ultimately what it comes down to. So, I mean, the cost of ownership for organizations, the cost of owning Silverlight code is going to be a lot less because you have that one single point of execution. I like that phrase. I'm going to use FNO. Question.
How close are Silverlight and WPF at this point?
Silverlight, the question was, how close are Silverlight and WPF? It's so close that it's confusing. So the nice thing is that your skill set going from one to the other is largely the same. But there's going to be certain things, particularly going from WPF to Silverlight, certain things that you like, nice little niceties that aren't necessarily in Silverlight or aren't implemented by default. So do you do WPF development?
Yes.
All right, so what I'll say next will probably make more sense to him than everybody else. So I'm talking directly at you. For instance, two-way binding. I'll explain that in a second. Is on by default in WPF, off by default in Silverlight. You know, I'm not going to judge the decision, but there's a lot of little weird gotchas that will surprise you. But you're already familiar with dependency properties. You're already familiar with data binding. You're already familiar with a lot of the core concepts, XAML, obviously. So the things that will bug you will be minor gotchas. So what I refer to as data binding, two-way data binding, is that I can have a control bound to my view model, and if I change it in my UI, it changes my view model automatically. I don't have to write any code. Versus one-way binding, which will only display, it'll only go one way. So it only, you know, if I had a value of foo that said 1, 2, 3, it would show on my screen as 1, 2, 3. But if it was a text box and I changed it to 1, 2, 3, 4, it wouldn't change back unless I used two-way binding. Did I confuse everybody? Did I put every non-WPF Silverlight person to sleep? Well, that's good, right? So what I'm about to show you, this is Silverlight. This isn't WPF. This isn't XNA. This is all running in Silverlight. So what we're seeing here is a sphere with textures mapped on top of it. And actually, each one of these is its own layer. So I can show you, if you're familiar with 3D graphics, I can show you the wireframe. I can show you the atmosphere. I can graph population density. I can even take control of that, and we can see the population hotspots. And we'll see that they actually make little mountains in that. I can spin the Earth around. Not a lot of people live in Antarctica. I can also turn on the magnetic fields. So this is all in Silverlight. I can change the rotation speed. So the code to do that isn't exactly obvious. When I first saw this, I was like, wow, that's really interesting. So this is markup called XAML. And what it does, it defines my controls, and it's basically an XML serialization of CLR objects. All of the 3D magic happens in this drawing surface. So there's a lot going on here as far as how this is drawn. So basically we have these geographic primitives, and I'm told that a lot of this will be, it's a really low-level API, which is great because you can really control everything. It's also bad because you have to control everything. So I'm told that there'll be a little bit more help. There'll be a math helper utility that'll be built into the SDK by the time this gets to RTM. I'm also told that there are a lot of 3D libraries already that exist that are going to implement on this. So Balder for Silverlight. And there's another one, Brightkite, I think is going to implement this. So you won't have to realistically get into all these details as far as writing your own shaders. So this is actually not C# or Visual Basic. This is actually a language called HLSL, High Level Shader Language, which is actually what's doing the rendering. And the cool thing about this is actually all getting it processed by the GPU. So we can run this again and see. I'm not really making a big draw on my processor. I can do that all I want. I can add this. And we still see I have less than 5% draw on my processor. It's because all of this is being executed by the GPU. So one such environment, if I can find it, that's actually in progress now that will make a lot of this kind of 3D, creating these 3D immersive environments easier, is a rendering engine called Babylon. So this is the mock-up of a Windows Cafe, which was, I know, set up for the Windows 7 launch. I don't know if it's still around. So I can look around. So think of the potential this has for gaming, social sites. Think of what this can do for visualization. I mean, it's really... So there's an upstairs here, a groovy little lounge. So all of this is done within Silverlight. And this is actually the Babylon Engine Viewer. So I can actually have different scenes that are defined by these BSF files. And no, there's not an editor available yet. I looked. I begged, I pleaded to get one. Think about what you can do in terms of architectural diagrams. And this is all going to be available through the web. You know, this is obviously running on the web. Yeah, everything you see is all XNA. So this is all XNA compatible. So this is all being offloaded to my graphics processor. So look for a lot more developments in this space. I think this is really, it's not rocket science to imagine integrating this with something like Kinect, where I could maybe do a walking gesture and, you know, have it input that stuff. So this is real. This was really exciting seeing this. So the other big thing was HTML 5, as well as showing off IE 10. And I realized that there's an E in every number between now and 32. So we'll have really cool shirts for this, or 30, actually. So here's a video that talks about how Microsoft is going to go forward with implementing the HTML5 specifications. And it's actually making fun of how another browser is doing it, but implementing standards that aren't really quite ready, and what that means for web developers.
I have a great idea. I am going to build a site. I am really excited about it.
Starting in the Google Chrome release 4.249, WebSockets are available and enabled by default.
So, what is it?
WebSockets are TCP for the web, a next-generation bidirectional communication technology for web applications. We are the first to implement the WebSockets.
Great. I just used them to build my new site.
WebSocket specification was just updated to 75.
What does that mean?
WebSocket specification was just updated to 76. WebSocket specification was just updated to 77.
Why are you telling me this?
Developers should be aware that starting from Chrome 6.414, the client will talk to a server using 76 version of the protocol, so it will fail to open WebSocket based on 75 version.
My site just broke.
Since 75 version of the protocol is obsoleted and no longer supported, you need to update the server implementation.
Okay, so I just rewrote my site to the WebSocket 76.
WebSocket specification was just updated to 78. WebSockets was just updated to 79. We are making great progress.
Oh my, in God.
Important update. We've decided to disable support for WebSockets in Firefox 4, starting with Beta 8 due to a protocol level security issue.
You must be shitting me.
So the reason I showed you that one and not the one on the extranormal site is that it's not bleeped out. So if you search for extranormal and WebSockets, you'll get the original raw version of the audio. So the point is, and Dean Hamak, I always pronounce his name wrong, and I apologize if he's watching. Dean Hakimanovich brought up a good point, is that if you implement something that's not on the standard that's finalized, you inject a lot of risk into your projects. So the idea, and this is really what happened with IE6, is that it implemented a lot of standards that weren't really finalized. And browsers, as we're finding out, have a really long half-life. So by waiting to implement features until they're finalized is a really smart thing, because you're not polluting the web. Because, I mean, it's been 10 years since IE6 came out, and it's still a significant portion of internet traffic. So I will move on to this will let me. Anyone know the significance of that date? Yes. So the other thing that I thought should be addressed, and I'm not knocking HTML5, although I suppose from where my bias is, it could be easily interpreted that I am. I think HTML5 is a great product, but the W3C says that this is the year that the specification will be finalized. That's not a typo. That's not a typo, and that's scary. But as we know, we're all developers here, I assume. There's done and then there's done. So what they're actually saying is that there'll be a, forget the exact verbiage, but it's done enough where it'll be, the first draft will be available in 2012. It'll be finalized in 2012. Or maybe I should use this graphic. The idea is that all the major vendors, they're targeting the 2012 date, and that's really when HTML5 is ready. Which brings me to this funny site. So there's a site called ishtml5readyyet.com. It's kind of a cheeky site if you view the source. The guy has a pretty good joke to tell, and he talks about how, yeah, you know, it's not finished in the sense of an engineering committee standards body saying it's done for all time, but it's finished enough to where you can actually start building sites with it today. In fact, if you go to beautyoftheweb.com, you'll see sites that have been built and work today in HTML5. So this is a site. It's inspired by anime. I don't speak Japanese, so hopefully they're not saying something offensive in the first 20 seconds of this. But it uses video and it uses SVG graphics. And it'll actually animate these SVG graphics to create a scene. So this girl's walking down the street. She opens up her cell phone. She gets a text message. IE9 kind of possesses her, and then everything turns magical. That's what I think the plot is. But it's really interesting. It's really creative because SVG had never really been used in this manner. It's typically used for engineering diagrams or whatever. But this is really interesting. And keep in mind, this is all HTML5. There's no Silverlight. There's no Flash, no nothing. Move on to another demo. Yes, question.
There were some rumors that Silverlight won't be available for the web development. It will be only available for the mobile development. Now, how much we can trust Silverlight to be in the market for the next 5 years? If I want to build an application now, and then after 2 years or 3 years, Silverlight is gone, as similar to what happened to the CamPlus, for example, that would be a problem.
Yeah. So the question was, how can we trust that Silverlight will be around for anything but phone or device development going forward? There's no plans to shut it down that I'm aware of, so you can take my word for it. There's also typically a 10-year product life cycle. There is a future in Silverlight. I know people on the team. I know people on the evangelism team that work solely for evangelizing Silverlight. There's enough resources and commitment to it that's, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, may lightning strike me down type, because there's a storm out there. But I don't see that happening, because I think that it's gained enough traction, particularly in the line of business and enterprise space, that it's just not going to go away like DCOM Plus did. So I don't see it kind of disappearing overnight like that. That just, I don't see that happening. And there are still, if you read the blog post that the Silverlight team put out, where they talked about Silverlight in HTML5 world, I mean, the basic thing is that the web has always kind of bounced back and forth between plugins and no plugins, right? So in the early days, suddenly plugins were going to do everything. And this is probably the 95 to 97 era. And then we realized, well, gee, that didn't really pan out. Because plugins can introduce a lot of problems. Not everyone has them. Then you have to account for that. Then everything kind of goes this anti-plugin state. And then somebody does something that's innovative. I think YouTube was really a big win for Flash. It's probably the most successful Flash-based site out there in the history. Now we see finally HTML5 has a video spec in it. But there's still a lot of problems with HTML5's video tag. The codecs are not defined. So I can have a video that posted that uses, we'll say, codec X, but your browser only stands codec Y. So it'll fail. It won't work. So
HTML5 would be the industry standard. That's also a gain for the HTML5 over the Silverlight. Like PHP, and if I know HTML5, I'm still good to go.
Yes, you're good to go under certain conditions. So the point was that HTML5 will be an industry standard, unlike something a proprietary binary thing like Silverlight or Flash. That's a valid argument. But what I'm saying is, with respect for the multimedia aspects of it, if I have something coded in H.264 is not supported on all browsers with HTML5. So I could make Frankie Browser 2012, right? And I can support HTML5 to the spec, to the letter. But if I don't have the H.264 protocol supported in my browser, then that video is not going to work. So you as a site owner are going to have to pick the least common denominator of formats, what's the most popular, or have multiple versions of your content. Either one's not really a great scenario. So that standards are great. Everyone should have one, right? So it's a really good video that one of the sessions from Mix called HTML5 for Skeptics. And that was the session that really kind of changed my mind about being very anti-HTML5 to saying that, you know, there's room for everybody. I highly recommend watching it because it's probably the most fair, reasonable assessment. Because the trade journals, the trade press, each one has their own agenda, which is usually creating controversy so they increase their traffic so they can charge more for ads. But the gentleman who spoke, I forget his name, but he built the Hard Rock. He made a living off Silverlight for the last 3-4 years. And, you know, he concedes that neither one's going away. I mean, it's going to be more. And I think having more tools in our tool belt is a good thing. So hopefully that answers your question with a minimum amount of spin. There used to be a sign on one of the buildings at Microsoft headquarters that said, "Those who ship win." And, you know, if you don't ship, chances are you're not going to make any money. And if their company you work for or agency you work for doesn't produce something, and you're probably not going to be around. So ultimately, I mean, it does come down to what your audience is. What are you trying to accomplish? Phones have a really good HTML5 story, but desktops, I mean, or you know, laptops, it's not so clear cut. I mean, my mom, not to pick on her, still calls her browser her Netscape. So, and you know, it's, how long have they been gone? So, it really depends on what you're doing. And the biggest piece of advice that really came out of Mix was, you know, look at your browser stats. You know, if 0.00001 of your visitors use IE6, then maybe you can not worry about that anymore. But on the internet, you have a lot more control. So chances are you know what's on your end users or your audience's desktop. And it's a lot easier to push out a plugin than upgrade their browsers, because usually there's a lot more to that. You know, it's not a clear-cut answer. I mean, I think people are looking for Microsoft to say, if X do Y, if A do B, We're not about that. We're about providing the tools that let you be productive, that let you be successful. Then you can pick and choose what you want to do. So hopefully that answers your question. I mean, it is the gorilla in the room right now. Any discussion in Mix was kind of like, you know, Silverlight developers were kind of like, oh, you know, HTML5 thing. HTML5 people are like, ah, that Silverlight thing or that Flash thing. You know, I don't see the need for the tension that there is. I think the more tools in your tool belt, the more successful you'll be. And the more tools you master, the more successful you can be. You know, that's really what the game is about. So this is the IE10 test drive site. You can go and you download this. It won't interfere with your default install of whatever version of IE you're currently using. Here's a really neat demo. Forgot about that music at the end, but you know, keep in mind this here is no Flash, no Silverlight. It's all HTML, and that's how many seconds it took, and that's how many objects it rendered. The real challenge for the IE team, I think, was if everybody's going to, let's assume it's possible, everybody can take a standard and follow it to the exact letter, all the same. Everybody can kind of get around the campfire and sing Kumbaya. Let's assume that's going to happen. How can you differentiate yourself? And the real way to do that is performance. And so that's really what IE10, IE9 is really going to go for, the ability to do this at speeds that other browsers can't match. So that if you're a consumer, you're going to see your computer much more efficient on IE. That's really what they're doing here. I don't have Chrome or any other browser installed here, but you wouldn't get that high of numbers. You wouldn't get this done in 10 seconds. So this is Fishbowl. And you know, this really isn't a practical demo. I mean, I overheard somebody say, who cares about fish? The point here is to see how many you can have and what your frames per second are. So I have 2,000 fish that are individually rendered in there, and I'm still getting 13 frames per second. We can take a look at my okay, that noise is annoying. So we could drop it down to 1. I will say that it's a fairly complicated animation. There's water, there's a frame, there's a mask, all sorts of layers here that make that complicated. If I go to auto, I've tested on this machine, it maxes out around 400-500 fish, depending on what else I have running. But you'll see, if you look at my CPU usage, it's still fairly low. So chances are your business application or your website isn't going to have fish running around on it. Maybe if you have a pet store type thing, it's not really practical. But it does show you what's possible as far as media experiences. If I unmute it, you can hear the music, the sound of that again. So I mean, this really isn't so much for today. I think this is really more for the day when the vast majority of people have HTML5 browsers on their desktop. Here's an interesting layout type example. So I can change this and it automatically goes that. But watch, once I shrink to this size, it actually really shrinks down. So that's an example of a clever layout. This lets you build gradients in CSS, and you can kind of see what's possible with this. A lot of hacks were in the past to do this. So, I mean, it really opens up a lot more options for web developers to to sneak the stuff in to their applications. You could have a better layout. You could, there's all sorts of stuff you could do. This is one I particularly like. So let's look for... So this is showing you, this is all HTML5. There's no flash, there's no anything like that. This has the dev tools in here. And this isn't really meant to be a primer on HTML5, although I suspect maybe we have a future event like that. But you can get an idea as far as looking at the script and what it takes to build something like this. So one really cool thing you can do in... how many people here have heard of site pinning? I'll drag this icon down to my taskbar in Windows 7. So Josh Holmes is another developer evangelist, and he showed me how to do this, and it's very, very easy to add to your site. So I now have his... Okay, that's a little weird. So it's a picture of his face on my taskbar. So imagine that was your company brand or your agency brand. So you can actually have that. You can mouse over it, and that's him. If I right mouse click here, I have a list of tasks that I can do. So you can actually integrate with the Windows 7 jump lists, much like you can do here, the Windows 7 applications. So if I go here, I click on that, it takes me to that page. Another developer evangelist has this on her blog. So if I drag this down here, I now have a branded experience with the colors. So I can change the colors on that. And I can right mouse click here. I can see her on the web, her on Twitter, Facebook, the events that she's doing, and other sites that she wants to promote. I'm in the middle of redesigning my site, so I didn't want to mess it up too much. So I even have this little bandwagon where I can drag that on. And all right, I copied and pasted her code, but you can actually have custom icons, and you can really integrate and have a much better experience. Another fun example is, how many people here know about Channel 9? Okay. Now, after night, everyone will, right? Assuming you're awake. I will drag this down to the taskbar, and I now have Channel 9. And you'll notice that actually the back and forward buttons and the Chrome actually have the colors of Channel 9. So how do you do that? Aren't you just curious to know? So how do we do this? So what I have here is we have it in just meta tags. There's no scripting. Although you can script it if you want a more complicated experience. So I have meta tags here that can define what goes on my my jump task list. That's the name. The content actually consists of three parameters here. So I have the name, what I want it to look like. I have the action URL that I want it to go to. And I have the URI to the icon. How easy is that? So you see Channel 9 does something very similar. They have this. There's also Slacker Radio has a something, so does Community Megaphone. All right, well, they have the color thing, but not the jump list. So it's an interesting way you can extend your website onto the desktop. Oh, there we go. It populated. So we can see that this is run by Andrew Duthie. There's his blog. That's the Twitter for Community Megaphone, the shortcut to add an event, and link to the podcast. So you can really really enhance the experience beyond just a typical kind of browser type experience. This only works with Windows 7 and IE9 and up. But there have been studies where the traffic increases to the site because it's the branding is there. You can actually drag this to desktop too. No, not going to work. So, something to keep in mind. So that's it for my slides. So if there's something in particular you want me to drive into, we certainly can do that. I know it's a bit early. So any questions at this point? Good question.
Were there any kind of announcements around Azure, or any of the Azure App Fabric type things that you happen to remember?
There was more updates regarding tooling around Azure, but nothing in particular. I suspect there was an announcement regarding WCF tooling being better integration with Azure, but the exact specifics escape me.
The other question I have is there any kind of expansion of the Nokia linking in with Windows Phone 7?
It's funny you mention that. So the question was there any more mention of Nokia and the Windows Phone 7 announcement? During the keynote, one of the speakers actually made mention that there's a lot of Symbian developers in the audience wanting to learn Silverlight. So, very interesting. I suppose that if you base your career on Symbian and you heard the news, it was probably a bit of a shock to hear that. So, that was really the only thing that came up in regards to that specific topic.
On the Mango, you think you just said it was out towards the end of this year?
Yeah, so the question was regarding Mango. The word I kept hearing was fall, and that's when Microsoft is going to push it to the carriers. When the carriers decide to get around to it that's anyone's guess. Who knows? Maybe there'll be instead of a sports book in Vegas, there'll be a carrier book in Vegas. I don't know with the odds of who's going to get it first. Being a Sprint customer, I have to say I've been very spoiled because I've always had Nodo. I thought that was because of they were really loved us so much they didn't want us to experience the upgrade pain. But apparently, one of the things Nodo does is enable CDMA support. So whenever Verizon launches theirs, it's going to have Nodo. And I have no information on when that's going to happen.
Said that the browser in the Mango was going to be
IE10. Yeah, so that was really the other thing too, is right now the browser in the phone is not IE9. In Mango, one of the updates that we're going to get is that the browser will be IE9, and that means that all the HTML5 tricks and stuff you can do on a desktop will also work, I guess in varying degrees on the phone. I'm sure there's going to be some catches because, I mean, realistically, I have 8 processors on this. I don't have 8 on this, and I probably don't have a GPU. The lag time is about 10 years, so this is about as powerful as my desktop was 10 years ago. So it'll be interesting. Yes?
Just so you know, there were actually a couple Azure announcements.
There were.
Yeah, so App Fabric caching is now commercially available, so it's out of
The content and CDN stuff, yes.
The Access Control Service V2 is now released to the web for production use. And then there was something else. The preview of being able to do smooth streaming via the Azure Content Delivery Network off of WebOS.
Oh, that's right. There's just so much flinging at you during the keynotes that you can't catch everything.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen them already, I highly recommend watching them. And the nice thing about watching them here, as opposed to being there live, is you can rewind and I want to see that again. Any questions?
Them, I think I'm looking for another website. It's live.
Which one?
All those webcasts for Mix.
Oh yes. So if you go to this site in here, you'll see the. Mixed sessions. It's actually now hosted on Channel 9. It's not on.
If you go to live.vidmix.
Nah, it moves to channel 9. There's also on Scott Hanselman's blog a list of all the RSS feeds, so you can put it into your favorite podcast software. So you can just fetch all the stuff at once. I wrote an app on the plane right back, which is kind of sad, to scrape the website. And because they didn't have those feeds available yet. So it went out, it scraped the these pages, basically, and fetched all the content. And it still works. It's just it's a little hokey. So your podcaster software is probably going to be a little bit more elegant as far as handling multiple streams and being asynchronous. And I just found out that the bootcamp content, which originally was not going to be posted publicly, some of the slides and some of the sessions from that, is already been posted.
There was mention made of the jQuery for Rhea services. Any more details on that?
And then we go to Jeff Handley's blog. He talks about it a lot, too. You can actually download it's something you can download and play with now.
Any other questions? Yes.
Any performance comparison between HTML5 and Silverlight for the same kind of job or something?
So the question was, any performance comparison between Silverlight 5 and HTML5? I've not seen anything like that yet. My guess is Silverlight would have a slight advantage. But Silverlight is still in beta, so there's a lot of performance optimizations that tend to happen towards the end.
I thought it would be the opposite.
You thought it would be the opposite?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, it's built in the browser.
It is built in the browser, but that's a good question. It really could go either way, because I know a lot of the same folks that did the optimization for Silverlight on the GPU ended up going to the Internet Explorer team and doing the same thing there. I don't know. It's a good question, because you assume the browser is written in native code, and maybe that would give it a slight edge. But you still have another layer of abstraction as far as interpreting HTML, and it does have to be loaded at runtime, whereas the ZAP is pre-compiled into, I don't know. As far as I know, no comparison like that exists yet. I would imagine that somebody somewhere will probably do something like that. But until it's not going to be a fair fight until Silverlight is more closer to RTM.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see that. So
yeah.
It could be either way. Then, it really depends. Silverlight is a sort of client, code, right? So it's a browser plugin, but once you download it, it's running on your desktop. Similarly, I think if the JavaScript, I think it's also running on your client. So I think it depends on the actual activity, function of that particular screen. If it's just within the browser versus you need to make calls to the middle tier to the back end. So it'll be interesting to see. I haven't seen that, so it's a good question.
And then, the other thing to bring out is that there's performance and then there's performance. I mean, do you mean like hitting the network and then getting resources back? Or do you mean like actual, churning graphics on the screen? Or?
Well, I mean, both ways, actually.
Both?
Yeah.
Networking, the latency of the network is going to be your big performance bottleneck for anything.
No.
Sure, yeah, I'm done, so.
Any questions for Frank? We still have 3 minutes, but this is a good time to does anybody care to see some source code of a Windows Phone 7 application? That's something you can use.
Feel free to contact me through my email or website. FrankSchwoll.com is the website, and email is franklay@michael.com.